Dear friends, in this weekly study of Bhagavad Gita, we are on the 14th chapter, which is a very important chapter, somewhat difficult to grasp, and therefore many times the students of Bhagavad Gita don't seem to give proper attention or understand the proper importance of this chapter in this our study. Of course, the study is geared, as we always emphasize, to the illumination. It is this illumination that we seek, that is what is Charles, you have any problem? Then you sit here. Okay. It is quite warm here. Yeah. So it is, this chapter is tremendously important for the actual practice and moving towards the goal. It is the psychology of liberation and psychology of bondage that needs to be understood in a very practical sense. And it is not easy because of the ingrained notions of permanently good something and permanently bad something. The relativity of good and not good or bad is not correctly grasped by everyone. Certain things are taken to be good, and so we think that they are good for everyone and in all situations. But that is not a correct understanding. Whatever helps us in attaining the ultimate goal at whatever stage, that is good at that stage for that purpose. And this understanding needs to be inculcated. We get bound by certain stereotype notions of good and not good. And they are helpful to certain extent. But when it comes to the process of liberation, those very things which are at one time considered good could be harmful, could be at some stage a hindrance. It is like to drink water is good, but there are cases, many people who have some impaired physical functions, they are asked to limit their liquid intake very minimal. For normal people, some quantity of liquid intake is good. And even if you take a little more, it cannot do any harm. But for certain cases, the liquid intake, water intake has to be very limited. So whether drinking water is good or not good, it is a relative thing. It could be good for some, in some situation, in some relative situation, it could be good. At some other relative situation, it could be bad. And therefore, the goodness or badness of a particular action or a particular substance is very, very relative. It is not that you can label certain action as always good or certain actions as always bad. And this creates this notion of a fixed good and fixed bad, create tremendous hindrance in our progress, because something that we take up as good because it helps, and then that very thing then becomes a hindrance for our further progress. So therefore this chapter is very important. It provides tremendous psychological insights into the nature of the bondage, and so it is unparalleled, friends. I'd have not found this beautiful and very penetrating analysis of this phenomena in any other scripture to such depth. And so I request all of you to pay more attention to these verses which are going to follow today. And we saw that the discussion on the gunas, guna also has the meaning of bondage in Sanskrit. A rope also is called guna. The word guna has many meanings, and one of them is a rope with which one binds. So that connotation also is important here. The thing that can bind us is guna. And we discussed the three gunas, the sattva, which is a very good thing in a way, that it brings the nice feelings of benevolence, compassion, goodness, happiness, the interest in knowing, knowledge, and such good things which really help the progress of a person. Then there is the rajas, rajoguna, and this is out of the desires, the activity springs up, and that activity makes us run about in various ways. As soon as the desire springs up, that desire doesn't let us sit still. It makes us work. It propels activity. Just like, you know, the pressing the gas pedal of the car, well, it creates the activity in the engine to that extent, and then if whatever gear your car is in, and the car gets propelled accordingly. So similarly, as soon as a desire comes in, it is a signal that makes the our personality charged with activity. And then the results of that activity also accrue. It comes in the form of dissatisfaction, in terms of enhanced desires, and also the sense of pain that follows. Suffering and pain, they follow as the result of it. Also the third is called tamoguna, which comes when our desires do not get the proper active this outlet, and thus it gets into indolence, laziness, quarrelsome and irritating nature. It doesn't become an activity, but it is not also the calmness or the sense of satisfaction and benevolence. It is a sense of irritation. It is like pressing on the gas while the car is in park. What happens there, the car doesn't move. It doesn't get that enhanced power, doesn't get any outlet to move. So it creates lot of noise. You are all familiar with this phenomena, I'm sure. Let your car be in P or in neutral and then press the gas pedal. The car won't move anywhere because it is not in that mode to move. It doesn't get the outlet for the power getting generated, and so it creates lot of heat and noise. So when we have these desires but not they are not getting proper channel, then we get that sense of irritation. The things are not, and that is called tamogun. A person becomes quarrelsome, a person wants to just do nothing. Sometimes it appears as if that person is getting lot of feeling of renunciation. No friends. That person is not trying to get free from activity like a saintly person will try. What is happening there is that person is getting irritated, that's all. That is not to be confused with this, what was first told, this sattva guna. So these three tendencies or these three ways in which our mind and therefore the nature functions, or you can take these as three types of substances or three types of bondages, three types in which the ropes can bind us. And now the description is going to follow that how each of these bind us. It is the very penetrative psychology, friends, and it is not really taught in the psychology courses. It is only the divine wisdom that is coming from Lord Krishna here, which is teaching these things to us. And we can see the tremendous efficacy of this wisdom that is being given to us in proceeding towards our ultimate goal. And as the master psychologist, Lord Krishna takes up first the bondage arising from sattva, the good thing, because it is not generally seen that the good things, why should I give them up, or why should I see the fault of bondage in them too. Therefore Lord is telling that first, that look, even what you see as good, it is good to make use of it, but it is not good to get bound by it. So we have to learn the science of making use of the good things, but not converting those things into a bondage. Good things, they bind us in a very funny manner. Because they are good, we get attached to them. And attachment is bondage. Even though it is good, it is a bondage. So the first, the verse number 6, I remember many, about maybe 35 years ago or so, when I first had the opportunity to read this, more than 35 years ago, to study this, I was really confused that why such good things are called bondage. But as I pondered over it, I saw that yes, that is a very important thing to know. It is very important thing to know that where our goodness could lead us to bondage. The good tendencies in us, they are good. That anything in life is good provided we make good use of it. And so, use of it in a wrong place or in excessive amount is not good. In the sense that it doesn't help us to get liberated, to realize our ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to be remembered. As we were thinking of it in meditation, we are ever free, ever illumined, ever perfect, ever blissful, all-pervading Self. That is the goal. Goal is to realize, to experience this truth. And whatever helps in realizing it is to be adopted. Then, if it helps us, it is good. If it does not help, it is to be discarded, howsoever beautiful and attractive it may look. So, let us see the sixth verse. Tatra satvam nirmalatvat prakashakamanamayam sukhasangena badnati jnana sangena chanagh. Of these, sattva, on account of its tenlessness, luminous and free from evil, it binds the embodied being by attachment to happiness and by attachment to knowledge. O sinless one, that is Arjuna. First line says that what are the beneficial, attractive, nice, good things about this sattva? That it is nirmalatvat. It is, comparatively speaking, stainless. It is free from dirt, free from impurities. And so, it automatically creates a sense. When you see a clean place, then automatically it creates a feeling of attraction there, that, oh wow, so good, so nice, I feel so good when I go there. It is as against a place which is filthy, dirty and so forth. You don't get attracted to that place in a natural way. So sattva, the good thing about it is that nirmalatvat. And it brings, when you go to a clean, nice-looking, beautiful-looking, serene place, then automatically those corresponding thoughts also spring up in us. So it is very helpful to have that kind of situation. And then prakashakam. It brings lot of illumination. Like the clean things, they reflect the light better. So, it is the light of the reality gets better reflected by this sattva. And also anamayam, it is free from evil. These are the qualities of sattva. We saw the story last time. We discussed a nice story describing these three gunas given by Sri Ramakrishna, that these three gunas are like three thieves. The three thieves, they caught a wayfarer and they took away all his possessions. And one of them said that, now we have taken all possessions from him, now no point in keeping him alive, let us kill this fellow. The other said, why till this fellow? He hasn't done anything. We have taken all the booty that we needed. Now no need to kill him. Let us tie this fellow so that he will not come after us. So we will tie him. So they tied him to a tree. The third thief came back and said that, well, let me open your bondage, let me untie you. And he unties that person and then tells, well, let me show you the way back to your village, how to get there. So he showed him where his village is, walked with him quite a distance, and then after pointing him to the road to the village, he said, bye bye. Now this person became really overwhelmed by the feeling of gratefulness. Oh, you are such a nice person. Without you, I don't know what I would have done. So thank you very much. So please come to my home. I would like to you to come to my home. I would like to give you some treat. You have been such a wonderful person, a wonderful friend. And then the third thief says, no, sorry, I am after all a thief. I cannot come there. I can only show you the way, but I will not come you to that place. That is, you have to go all by yourself. So this, the third thief was this sattva, a good being, that it liberates from that bondage of that rope, and then shows you the path, but cannot come with you till that place. You have to give him up. If you do not give up that sattva, then you remain stuck there. You do not reach home, the sweet home, the Om. You do not reach the true self. That is the meaning there. That is the real sweetness, the Om, our true nature. So you won't get there unless you are ready to understand that this is also ultimately a thief, and I have to say bye-bye to this person, although comparatively he was much better than the other two, and he did help me to get freed from those ropes. So, sattva is very good, but how does it bind? Sukha sange na badhnati. The good things, like happiness, you feel a serene sense of happiness, and then that is a big bondage. You get attached to it. How nice it is. You do not like to get rid of that attachment. It is, and then not only that, we tend then to find out reasons not to get freed from it. And when we want that, we will get lots of reasons. So, this pleasure sensation that, oh, it is so nice, I love it. And you get then bound by that sukha sangen. Remember the psychology of it. Anything that brings pleasure, then the mind gets tied to it. One has to be very introspective and observant, friends. Why this topic is a bit difficult to understand is that when the pleasure comes, it sounds very nice, it sounds good, it is wonderful, but it covers our tendency or our faculty of introspection. It is all very nice. We forget our goal when we see that a nice place there. It sometimes happens when we are on a long car trip, then of course there is the destination that we have to reach, and we have limited time to get there. On the way, we see that, wow, this is looks like a beautiful place. So why not stop there for a little while, eat some goodies, sit for some time. It is a very pleasant spot, and nice scenery, a scenic spot. So you get there, and it is certainly nice. You feel there that sense of coolness, and the sense that it is beautiful. The serene thoughts come, we should come here very often, and so forth. So this idea comes to us, but then what happens? We forget that we have to go to the goal, the destination. Instead of stopping there, we had decided, okay, let us stop there for 10 minutes. But after 10 minutes are finished, then nobody wants to look at the clock and say, hey, come on, let's start. The 10 minutes are already over. 15 minutes elapse, 20 minutes elapse. The more we stay there, it becomes more difficult to get out of it. So the movement or the progress towards the destination gets impaired by this. Although it is beautiful, you are not stopping at a place where lot of stinking garbage is and dirty looking and noisy or whatever. No, it is very nice. It provides a lot of relief. Good. But now it binds also. So all these many good things that come to our life, we get attached to them, we get bound by them, because they bring pleasure, and then pleasure stops us from introspecting. Let us remember this, friends. The pleasure has this tendency to prevent the introspection, because we feel nice. When there is pain, then you go to doctor and find out why the pain is there. When you are feeling fine, nothing, then you don't have the tendency to go and find out what is wrong, or is everything fine or not. It is that pleasure is something that dulls our faculties. It puts us in a state where we lose the sight of the goal. You know that that's nice story, very illustrative story, that how ultimately the hare lost the race to tortoise. You know the story, both started, hare and the tortoise. And the hare moved fast and then saw that, the tortoise is going very slowly, it can never catch up with me. So let me take a break. The destination is just close by, a few leaps and I will be there in no time. And then the hare sleeps there, and that is a very pleasant state. You are not running about, you are resting there. So you don't want to go overtake that, you don't want to break that, you are not introspecting. And then the tortoise overtakes the bondage. The meaning is that the bondage of this pleasures, they are like that. It feels so sweet that you don't want to exercise introspection and understand that it is bondage. Our connections in the world, our relations, I and mine, they all feel they are imbued in that sweetness. We feel so nice with them. Yes, it is beautiful, it is nice, it is so cute, wonderful, you hug them, all very good friends. But it creates a big impediment in our progress to the goal. Howsoever nice it is going to be taken away from you. It is going to bring pain. It is going to bring very stringent bondage. That is the nature of even the very sweet and beautiful things. That which is very sweet, very beautiful, doesn't remain beautiful, doesn't remain sweet. Even as beautiful, it is bondage. But you may think, okay, I can have the beautiful bondage, doesn't matter, I don't need liberation. I can have this pleasant, beautiful bondage. The problem with it is that it doesn't remain pleasant and beautiful for too long. That is the nature of the world. Keeps on shifting continuously. And that is the problem with it. That people come together, come close to each other, think that how beautiful it is, very nice, wonderful, we will remain like this for ages, let our association continue like this together from life to life, many lives like that we will live together. Very good. Maybe for half an hour it lasts like that, then the frictions begin. Naturally, you know, it is not that it is fault of anyone. It is, we keep on blaming them and that why did this person behave like this? Why did that person was not sensitive to my needs? And so forth. That is really not at all the reason. It is just a blame game. It is in the nature of the things itself. That this state cannot continue. So we have to realize that it's sukhasangena badnati, that one way of its bondage is giving this sense of pleasure. Wow, so nice. This bondage is very difficult to grasp, very difficult to understand. It is indeed the greatness of Lord Krishna, his genius, that he has used a most potent, most beautiful phraseology and the setting to impart this wisdom to us. It is very rare that this kind of wisdom can come in our understanding unless we are very intently looking for it. So this is and another bondage that it has is jnana sangena, the attachment that it creates with the knowledge. That you read something, let us read Bhagavad Gita, it helps me, very nice, I knew many things. And then it is good, but it also can bind. And we want to then spend time in reading, understanding Bhagavad Gita and more books without actually practicing those things. We get attached to that external information, knowledge, because the pleasure of that sattva type goes together with that knowledge. When I understand something, it creates a sense of joy. What a nice thing, I didn't realize it earlier. Does it not create a sense of happiness in us? And that happiness is very pure. We do not feel that it has a binding element, but it has. You, your Shankaracharya has given such beautiful commentary on this. Very few lines, friends, but very penetrative. That is, we have seen, that is the nature of the comments of Shankara. They are very pithy, very brief, and to the point. He says that the self is full of bliss. In fact, bliss is the nature of the self. It doesn't need any object to get bliss from or pleasant sensation from. Whenever you try to get any pleasant thing from outside, from something, then you are getting into bondage. And this fact, it doesn't come to us, we don't know. Oh, it is so nice to be with this person. And these little babies are so good. The other day when lady was telling me, first she was very, candid about it. She said that, I was thinking about it, I knew it will be a big bondage that if we get a puppy in our house, a little pup. I know already I have so many attachments and bondages and all that. Why should I have one? I thought about it, but my husband wants, so I think if I say no, it will sound very selfish. So therefore, I consented that it will be a kind of bondage, but it's all right. But after a few months, the things changed. And she understands it very well, being a sincere spiritual aspirant. And now she says, within a few months, now that story is about 2 years back, and within a few months she started telling, Swami, they are so pretty, those little she, instead of one, then they got two, why two? Because they need company, so I thought, why just one, let me have two little puppies, so she got two puppies, so that they can play nicely, and they are so cute, you must see them. Oh, well, what am I to do, seeing them? And they are so nice. I spend all my time with them these days, and so I don't feel, I know that I should do my spiritual practice, I should read the scriptures, I should get my thing, this understanding clear and act on it. I should understand the importance of holy company and so forth. But as soon as I look at them, all that thinking gets locked up. Now, are those puppies bad? Those puppies are not bad. Are those puppies good? They are not good either. Now, those things are neither good nor bad. How we get out of them, that is the question. What we get out of them, that is the question of being there good and not good. They clearly are nice, sweet, instead of, having a lot of garbage at home or some monster in the home, then instead of that, it is good that you have nice, pleasant looking puppies at house, okay, or nice cats at house, okay. Now the question is, you have the cats in the house, so nice, and then you start ascribing lot of spiritual qualities to them because you don't want to now cut asunder the attachment to them. The attachment starts overtaking and putting its words in our mouth that should we not be compassionate to them? Now, just introspect, is the compassion speaking or the bondage speaking? In almost 99.9% cases, it is the bondage that is speaking. Compassion, very good. The compassion demands, maybe like in that puppy situation, maybe for half an hour's attention per day would be enough as matter of compassion. But as matter of attachment, there is no end to it. It is all the time. And that lady understands it very well. But understanding is a good first step to learn to cut that attachment. It is, of course, a lesson that even such sweet-sounding attachments are so difficult to get rid of. Many people get attached to the children and worse, grandchildren. It is a very funny situation, friends, that the bondage seems to perpetuate. And you say first that how cute, how nice, that baby is so nice. Yes, of course, no problem with the baby. Problem is with your attachment to that. Do you want to get freedom, liberation, bliss and peace, or you want to stay bound? When you see that clearly, then you understand this situation, how sattva binds. Sattva can bind. Sattva is a very important liberating force from the bondage of the rajas and tamas. But if you have, for example, knife to cut the bondage, fine, but you see the knife, it did such good job for me. It is so good. Let me move it on my nose. Then you will cut your nose by that. So, after the function is done, that you have cut those ropes, now keep the knife aside. Job is done. Don't hold the knife to your heart. Oh, it is so dear. It can kill you. So that is the danger with this sattva guna. That is not to say that so we should not acquire sattva guna. We should acquire it. We should strive to get this sattva in us as it helps to liberate us from the others. But we have to remember at the deepest level of our personal being that it is also a bondage. Not an easy thing to remember, but we have to strive for that. The bondage continues with sattva. Those people who have lot of sattva tendencies in us, they start taking pride in it. We are good people. We don't go to quarrel with others. We have very good relations with our neighbor. And we read Bhagavad Gita every morning. I get up early in the morning, go for a refreshing walk. All nice things. Very good. But that creates a sense that that is enough. Why should I now go for liberation? You miss the goal. If you miss the goal, by how much distance you missed really doesn't count then. It doesn't matter whether you are swimming and you drowned right in the beginning or just a few feet away from the other shore. It is, that is the important thing, friends, to remember that the sattva, very important, please don't get me wrong, don't get Lord Krishna wrong, that so let me not acquire sattva guna. We must strive to acquire it. We must strive to increase, intensify our sattva tendencies. But have to remember that they also have a strong capability of binding us. Very strong capability, because it doesn't look like bondage. Other things like rajas and especially tamas, they come to us in the form of bondage. They look like bondage. Sattva doesn't look like bondage. You feel, you can really, it is such nice, so sweet. It is like if your hands are bound by very harsh ropes or the chains, then those chains hurt, and so you want to break free because it hurts. Suppose they are bound by a silken cloth. They are bound, and now the silken, that cloth is beautiful. It doesn't seem to hurt too much. And we don't get the feeling there that we are bound. It is good. People praise us. So how nice that cloth around your hands is, so beautiful, so nice. it takes away this idea of bondage associated with them. Do you get this point? That it appears to be so nice. That silken cloth around my hands, so decorative, so beautiful looking, and let me just have it. I can throw it away any time. That is another idea with the sattva bondage. That yes, we can. That it is so easy to break it. Yeah, and therefore it is so difficult to break it. Because intellectually, emotionally, it creates a sense of attachment to it very strong. It is so beautiful, and therefore you cannot break it. It is because if you try to break that, you will tear the cloth. No such beautiful cloth. Why should I destroy it? Well, it is a bondage. In Swami Vivekananda's that great song of Sannyasin, he says that look, all these chains that bind you, they may be of baser ore, or of gold, they are bondages, and so you have to give them up. And so he says that, therefore, give them all and say, Om Tat Sat Om. This bondage of sattva is therefore to be understood at depth. The next one, Raju Ragatmakam Vidhi Trishna Sangasamudbhavam Tannibadnati Kaunteya Karma Sangena Dehinam. That Rajas. That desires come up, and then those desires, they cloud our understanding, and then we feel that all that I need to become happy is out there. If I get hold of that girl, or of that boy, or of that money, or of that any particular thing, then I will get happy. That dynamizes a person. We can feel it inside, how the dynamism comes up. If we observe a desire, it's working, it titillates. First, a titillating sensation comes. Ha! Okay, I should do it. You start planning immediately how you are going to do it. And then you go out to do it. And then that is Krishna Sangha Samudbhavam, that because of the attachment to desires that comes. And how does it bind? You get involved in more and more and more activity. Activity is a very funny thing, friends. It is very helpful. But as karma yoga, that as a yoga, an activity is very helpful. But It is a bondage because it involves you into more and more activity. One gets attached to the activity itself. So, if you do not have anything to do, one may get that sense of depression. Some psychologists had warned me that, you know, after this big ceremony that you had, if it is so much work everybody is doing, after it is done, next day you are going to feel a big vacuum, a big lull, and so forth. I told, well, I am aware of that. Had I been doing that activity for that, because of getting involved in that activity, I will feel it. And therefore it is important that we don't get involved with the activity, but get involved with God, with our goal, through that activity. So, if not, then you keep on looking for more and more action, more and more work. You keep on looking at it just to avoid boredom. We get bored, there is nothing I can do. So, that is how the rajas binds us, and the tamas binds us, that because of the delusion, the goal is not at all seen, the tendencies of irritation, quarrel, sleep, indolence, laziness, and they come to us. All these three, they bind us. The last two I have not discussed in details today, firstly because they are quite obvious as bondages. And secondly, we don't have much time about it. We may take up a little bit of discussion on the bondage of rajas and tamas when we assemble next time, next Friday. Let us see that how we get bound by all these three. So-called good also is a bondage. And let me tell you in this regard, that so-called bad could be, in some specific situations, a help too. It is again very relative. For some people, the rajas, the activity is very necessary to pull them out of that slumber of tamas. It becomes helpful, necessary, needed. And so it is good relatively. Tamas also is good relatively. Why? Because it gives you some rest from the incessant activity. Think, you know, if you are continuously working, don't sleep at all, then the body will be just ravaged, destroyed quickly. So therefore, that tamas is helpful to give us at least sleep. Before just drop everything, feel tired, and so we don't do anything. At least we are saved from excessive action because of that. So it also has a helpful component to it. So we shall try to discuss those in our next class. Any question about today's discussion? Yes, Charles?
So if you realize something is bondage, even if it's a big habit, you can still overcome it?
If you are introspecting it, you should overcome it. If you find that it is an impediment in your spiritual path, at that time you won't feel. Therefore, the spirit of introspection has to be kept alive. That penetratively look at that, that whether it is impediment or not. To give you an example, Swami Vivekananda, when he used to go as a college student to Sri Ramakrishna, he had that natural inborn, very rarely, in fact it is a unique thing in Vivekananda only, you see such thing, that to get into meditation spontaneously. Didn't need to do any effort for that. Just the mind was so concentrated and calm that he would go into meditation just like that. It is now, as he was meditating, he found that he got the power of seeing, knowing intuitively that what is happening at what place. The power of clairvoyance and clairvision and all that. And so, after meditation, he would go and find out, was it really happening like that or not? And he narrated this to Sri Ramakrishna, that this is happening and this is a distraction. Sri Ramakrishna told him, therefore, don't meditate for some time. Now, that is a good advice for him. Meditation is good. I am not to be to follow that, reading it. Oh, Sri Ramakrishna said, don't meditate, so I should not. I mean, no, it will be terrible for me if I followed it. Because it is, I am not in that state. So, even a very good thing like meditation could be an obstacle. Please take it, you know, with this, that even a very good thing like meditation could also be an obstacle if it leads to it. For most of us, for 99.9% people, to learn to practice meditation, to learn to practice concentration is of course a great, most important, most congenial thing for spiritual life. So, one has to keep the spirit of introspection to get the advice from scriptures and teachers always intact. And that therefore can act as this great support to tell us that what is not going right. It is the holy company that can tell us that what is not going right in the life. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarai Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukhapadmadvinisrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantrah Tasya Namaniyani Karmapyekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Krishna Arpanamastu.